I'm going to Liberty City. Liberty City, here I come. To doom to clap. Doom to doom to doom to. I'm going to Little Haiti. Little Haiti, here I come. Doom to doom to doom to doom. I'm going to get myself some ha ha and cast it ha. Here I come. Doom to doom to doom to doom to doom to doom. I could take a cab. I could take the train. I could walk to the corner, but I would be insane. I'm going to Little Haiti. Little Haiti, here I come. Doom to doom to doom to doom to doom. They've got some crazy little. Homosexuals there, and I'm going to get me one. Dun, 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 dun. Thank you very much.
Greetings, and welcome to this, the sixth episode of the Casa de Jaja podcast. We are halfway through 2012. Yay! You only get a sixth once, people, until the 12th, which is the second sixth. So, thanks for listening. It's really nice that you continue to do that. And what a delightful show we have for you today. We have stand-up clips from the June Casa de Jaja show at Sweat Records, sweatrecordsmiami.com. Doing a plug there. Don't know why. I was just trying to set up the show. All of a sudden, I'm promoting Sweat Records. What are you doing to me? Great comedians performed that night, and I have a clip from a couple of those great comedians. We have a clip from Dominic Perenzin, then John Wynn, followed by Kirk Meadows and Eric Myers after that. Lovely stand-up. Followed by a wonderful interview with John Wynn, the second comedian you will hear. And you've heard him on this podcast before. You may have heard about Labor Days, his web series. We're going to be talking about that and the nature of stand-up in this modern world, what it's like to have a baby come out of your body. Or so he expects. And, jovial fun. So, do listen. Continuing from here, I hope this hasn't dissuaded you from listening. I rather hope I've just informed you as to what you should expect. As this, usually does. Stand-up clips, and then, John Winterview. Ribbip boop beep beep beep. Begin.
By Coconut Grove where I live, they have this guy just every single week asking for money, and he had a sign that says hungry. I'm like, dude, you're missing a whole bunch of words. Or maybe. I just came a little bit late to the power cardboard presentation. Where he's gonna explain how he got hungry. and the thing about this guy is I'm not gonna make, he had a cap that says CSI. Like, what kind of mysteries are you solving, homeless guy? Like, you should start working on mystery number one. Where did my house go? That is priority. Just stop worrying about, like, where my two front teeth went. You know, progression, maybe, then murder mysteries. I don't know how the police works, but I would have gone with that. I do have a day job. Comedy is not my only job, clearly by this performance. I have to keep a day job. And in my day job, they have this thing that they're doing down every year. It's called performance reviews. Essentially, they told me it's kind of like I tell the company how I feel about myself. I'm like, that's awesome. I love to lie. So they asked these questions. Like, the first one they asked was, are you a hard worker? And I'm like, all right. I said, I am a hard worker. And they go, what is your biggest weakness? That I work too hard. I'm like a workaholic. I wish I could be like my co-workers and do the bare minimum. But let me tell you guys, if I had told my work what my biggest strengths and weaknesses are, it would be a little bit like this. My biggest strengths, my ability to steal office supplies. Guys, I steal so many office supplies. I could start my own office supply store, which I would call Office Repo Depot, and sell right back to my office at a discounted rate.
One round of applause for Mr. John Wick.
Thanks, everybody. This guy just fucking just stood right up and walked out. Didn't say anything. Does anybody know that guy?
I do.
Who said that? Who knows him? Why did he I didn't even say a joke, dude. Why did he fucking get up and leave?
Hey, why'd you leave, Ahmed?
Why'd you leave, dude? What's his name?
Ahmed.
What's his name?
Ahmed.
Ahmed, why did you leave, dude?
I'll be back.
In the middle of the set?
Yeah.
It's gonna fucking disrupt me, man. Come on, dude.
I'm
trying to do some comedy gold here, bro. What's up, buddy? All right, all new jokes, everybody. Very dark. Are we done talking about the Rudy Eugene? Is everybody done talking about this guy? Does everybody know Rudy Eugene?
No.
Yeah.
He's the guy who ate the face of the homeless man. Does everybody know him?
Yeah.
And we're done talking about him? I don't think so. Right? What if you, there's more jokes to be mined there, right? Listen, if the guy is eating homeless people's faces, if that doesn't motivate homeless people to get off the fucking streets, I don't know what will, okay? They said today that the guy came out and got his face eaten. They said his first words today were, go heat. Is that really? His first words were, go heat? He's going to try to unite the city right now when everybody was driving past him like at 40 miles an hour throwing pennies at him and nobody gave a shit about him. Now he's going to be like, go heat? Let's be honest. I think he was saying, don't eat. But the guy, Rudy Eugene's black. I don't know if you guys know that. He got killed. He was a black guy. And then a weird thing happened 2 days later in Maryland. This Nigerian college student was arrested for eating the brain and heart of his college roommate. He got arrested and he admitted to it. And I don't know what is going on in the world, guys, but it is very obvious now that black guys will eat any body part except vagina. Can we all agree? That's a fucking good joke. This crowd's been wasted on these people. All right, anyway. No, I mean, thanks for coming out. Thanks for coming out and supporting comedy, but you're not going to laugh. What's the fucking point? All right, anyway. All right, Jerry Sandusky. You guys know Jerry Sandusky? Do you guys own a fucking computer? Do you guys read news or anything? Twitter, anything like that? Who's Jerry Sandusky? Guy texting in the front with suspenders and shorts. Who's Jerry Sandusky?
The molester guy.
The molester guy, exactly. That's what we should call him, the molester guy. He's the 68-year-old football coach who molested 12-year-old boys. He's finally going to trial, everybody. And his defense team is going to use something called the histrionic personality disorder, which means that people with low self-esteem do over-dramatic actions to get the approval. Why does he want the fucking approval of 12-year-old kids? They can't fucking do shit for you. 12-year-old kids can only do two things, right? Play video games and get molested. That's it. Again, winner right there, guys. You're not... That's a fucking good joke, guys. All right. That's like written today. All right, anyway. Alright, so I don't know. Who knows what's wrong? Who knows what's wrong? What do you do for a living, sir? In the suspenders and shorts. Are you a student or?
Yeah.
You a student? What are you studying?
Math.
Math? No shit. Where at?
I go to UPenn in the fall.
You go to where?
UPenn. I start in the fall.
You start in the fall? Okay, so you go to college though?
Yeah.
Good. And that's your girlfriend? No? How are you just friends? Is it the friend zone?
Yes.
It is, right? Do you want it to be more though, dude? What's your name?
Elvis.
Elvis?
Elvis.
Elvis. Oh, it's okay. Cool. It's a great name. And what's your name, miss?
Charlie.
Charlie? Okay. Elvis and Charlie. Okay, that's an interesting name. They named you, you're a girl, and your name Charlie. Charlie, you know, they call Asians Charlie too, but anyway, okay, anyway, so, I have a joke here. I really have a joke here called Friend Zone, but I have no context of where it's gonna go, so I'm just gonna say a bunch of shit, and then maybe it'll make some sense for you. You gotta get out of the fucking Friend Zone, dude, okay? You gotta get out of the fucking Friend Zone, alright? The fastest way to get out of the Friend Zone, what do you think it is? Punch in the titty. That's it, right there, guys, okay? There's nothing that is going to redefine your relationship faster than a punch in her titty. Do it, Elvis. Fuck math. Just punch her titty. Okay, all right, here we go. Okay, there was were some good jokes in there. Sandusky was pretty good, but it's only topical for a little bit, and a lot of people know Sandusky. The Miami Zombie's not going to last much longer, so, okay, anyway. All right, this is a stupid joke. All right, you guys, I like fast food, clearly. I like fast food. And my favorite fast food places are the places where the name defines the food for you. For example, KFC describes the chicken, Kentucky Fried Chicken. Pollo Tropical describes the chicken, tropical chicken, right? Sonic describes the speed at which the food travels from your mouth to your asshole. What do you guys think? No? Yes. Physics? You didn't like that one? Sonic speed? But did you guys know they sell a home Taco Bell kit? They sell a Taco Bell kit that you can make the flavors of Taco Bell in the comfort of your own home. Isn't that awesome, guys? What kind of mixed, kind of weird, lazy, active pothead do you have to be to have the home kit for Taco Bell at your house? Like, you're getting really high, and then you smoke a big bowl, and then afterwards, like, I want Taco Bell, and I also feel like julienning some tomatoes. Is that what you do with tomatoes? You julienne them? I don't know. All right. What other cooking phrase? Sauteing beef? All right, anyway. Okay. All right, that was all the new shit. I have no idea if it's good or not. The Sandusky thing is gold, but you guys fucking shit on it. I'm having a daughter. Isn't that exciting? End of August. Cheap applause. I'm just going to do that. I'm just going to do cheap. I'm just going to... to solicit cheap. How about the troops, guys? All right, anyway. Do you guys hear about that poor homeless guy? All right, anyway. I'm scared to have a daughter, okay? Because guys can be pretty creepy. I think guys are creepy, and I can say that because I'm a guy. I've been creepy. Elvis, have you been creepy? Ever? Oh. Suspenders with shorts? Creepy. It's a little on like the Aryan Nazi thing, you know what I mean? It's like from a distance, you pull it back, you might think he's a Nazi or in the Sex Pistols or something. I don't know, you know what I mean? Okay, anyway.
Give it up for Kirk Meadows.
Wow, this is a great opportunity. Thank you guys for coming out.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks. Wow. This is a very big moment in my life, you know, I want to remember this. Good to be here, man. No flash photography, please. No flash photography. There's no meet and greet after this. Okay, I have to go. I have things to do. Is that the light? Am I getting an echo? Hello? Hello? Sounds like I'm in a tunnel or something. This is good. Why say take me out to the ball game while you're at the ball? Make sense to anybody? That's stupid. Take me where I am right now. This is where I want to be. Doesn't make sense. If I could turn back time, I would have never bought that sheer CD. If I could turn back time, I would have never told that joke. I have a joke about abortion, but it's not fully developed. I think I'm going to get rid of it before it's too late. I'm going to rip it out and throw it in the dumpster behind Kmart. So thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks a lot. This was fun. Good night now.
Like, you can't ejaculate. I don't know what it does, but I'm, like, trying to jerk off all day. Nothing. Nothing happens. Have you ever watched an entire porno movie? No one has. You watch 5 minutes, you're done. I watched all 2 hours of this movie. By the end, I'm emotionally invested. Like, don't leave her, jerk! What about the baby? And I was in rehab. I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm recovering. treatment. So we had to do yoga to cure ourselves of alcoholism. I don't know if you ever had withdrawals from alcohol, you're nauseous, you have the shakes. I'm trying to do poses. I'm sorry I have a seizure. I'm sorry if I can't do downward facing dog right now. The only thing I did like a dog was shit on the floor. I made that namaste. They treated all kinds of addictions there. They had a sex addict. They're like, take child's pose. I'm like, no. And in rehab, they pump you full of meds when you get in there. Like, they have Ativan for alcohol withdrawal. They have meds for depression, for sleep, for mood stabilizer. You're on so many meds. You're so fucked up. I was more fucked up there than I was actually drinking on the streets. They're like, Eric, how's your anxiety? I'm like, who's Eric? And I was raised really religious. Like, my dad's really religious. So I had to read the Bible growing up. I read the Bible 10 times, front to back. And a lot of people don't understand the Bible. Like, they quote it, but they don't know what they're talking about. Because in the book of Leviticus, it says, if a man sleeps with another man, it's an abomination. People use this to condemn gay people. The very next line, and I'm not kidding, is if a man eats shellfish, it's an abomination. True. No one's ever picketing the Red Lobster. No one's blocking the entrance. Enjoy your popcorn shrimp in hell, motherfucker! I hope it's worth it. They smell good, though. Hey, you guys have been awesome. Thanks for hanging out. Have a good night. I'll see you later. Daniel Reskin, everybody. Yeah. At the Louvre.
At the Louvre. One more time for Eric Myers. Let him feel it. Closing out the show. You fantastic people.
Alrighty. Hey, yeah. Daniel. How's it going?
Oh, hello. Hi there. We are here. I'm Daniel. The voice said that, and the voice belongs to John Wynn.
Hello. How's it going, everybody out there in podcast land?
Have you been there?
I listen to them. I visit many various podcasts, including this one.
Podcast land.
Yeah.
But those are the people making the podcasts.
The people making them live there. Uh-huh. And I think they build their houses there, and I visit their neighborhoods every once in a while.
So you think that's who's listening to us? The makers of podcasts?
Audience. We're that maybe the other people visiting.
We're like a podcast.
Maybe the other
podcast,
visitors.
Right?
Yeah, that would be a good way of doing it.
Like
that would
a
be a different
star.
Way of looking at it. It's a very alternative podcast. Mm. No one has that podcast.
In the world where alternative is mainstream.
Yeah.
We go mainstream to be alternative.
Yeah.
I don't know what we're talking about. Well, that's fun. John Wynn's here. That's so great. We've heard him in the podcast before. This is not the first time. And it was a fun show, this one. It was a summer doldrums show. It was great.
Is that what they're called?
That's what I'm calling a show where most of the audience leaves before they even get there.
Yeah.
So,
what a nice name, the Summer Doldrums.
It kind of rolls off the tongue,
yeah.
Even though it's a horrible...
Instead of just like, the comic was terrible. The Summer Doldrums.
Well, no, it was a good show, but it was a slow Miami summer show. Even though the one before and the one after were packed.
Yeah.
You never know.
I can take my medicine. I actually like it. I like bombing, so... I just want to hear it, but...
Sure, well, so does the audience. They agree.
They enjoyed it, too. Summer Doldrums.
That's
a good
name.
That's
fun. What are you? You're a regular at Casa.
Yeah, it's a great room. You guys do a great job running it. And how long have you guys been doing it now?
We're going to be 4 years next month.
Yeah, that's great.
Next month,
most
big extravaganza.
Consistent, one of the most consistent rooms.
I only brought
comedy.
It up actually so you could compliment the room.
I like to compliment. I like to compliment a lot of people. I like to compliment people. I don't like to take any. Compliments, but it is a great room. It's one of the most consistent rooms.
It's the same, you know. I just had Freddie Stebbins here last episode.
Yeah,
in this very chair.
Oh, fantastic! He's fantastic.
And he shares the same ability to self-deprecate and tell everyone else that they're amazing.
Yeah,
but look upon oneself as a ball of perhaps feces.
Well, yeah, that's true. I do that a lot too, but that's because I eat really bad food too. So I'm literally a ball of feces. Like right now, I'm a ball of feces.
Like what percentage of you is feces right now?
At least 45%. I had a bunch of wraps from Publix today, so.
Wow.
They're
where something is a pleasure.
Yeah. So, I love all feces.
That's not, that displaces a lot of the water.
Yeah. This is changing your show dynamically that we're talking about poop. Poop jokes in the first 4 minutes.
Oh, we would never skirt such a subject. Well, how long have you been doing yucks?
Let's,
brass tacks.
It'll be, let's see, I've been in comedy now for, it'll be 4 years in November. November will be 4 years. And,
a couple months from
like, then. Officially doing stand-up 4 years.
Now, what's unofficial?
Like, writing scripts and stuff like that, I think, writing short films and comedy films and shorts and feature scripts and stuff like that.
Right, so for people who don't know, you do have a quite saturated film background.
I'm a film person. I've been doing film since I was like 20 years old, and I'm 38, so.
Now, was that some sort of trying to copy Louis C.K. before he had something to copy?
No,
just making sure.
Trying to do something to make a living, because I'm very bad at everything else, and I didn't want to wait tables. So
I take offense.
Sorry about that. Not that waiting tables is not a noble profession. I just am not good at it. I didn't want to be around a lot of people. So, so I started doing film. College.
From what did you? Were you an artistic person? Were you an expressive person? Was that easy for you to become like an artist type or creative type?
Yeah, I think as a kid, I always I loved comic books and I liked just the layout of a comic book and it's essentially storyboards.
What got your comic book?
I was a big Batman fan. Still a big Batman fan. And I was a big Spider-Man. Those were my two big comic books as a
huge
kid.
Spidey.
Yeah,
because he was kind of smaller and he was hilarious.
Yeah.
He was like arguably one of the funniest.
He's the best. Yeah, he's funny. And then there was periods where you go into like you would read certain series, you'd jump on board maybe because an artist or writer, and you stay on that with them for a little bit, and jump off.
Right.
But I was a big comic book geek, and I wanted to be an animator.
Nice.
Actually, I used to draw a lot, and my parents were very anti-art. They were like, you got to be a dentist or a doctor or something like that. So
was that drilled into you?
Yeah, good. I like that. Work that in. That's good. So I...
Was it somewhat stereotypical? Did they slap a violin in your arms?
No, a piano. They put a piano in my arms. They slapped the piano in my arms. And,
that's pretty heavy. You must
very
be a
heavy,
child.
Very heavy. And so learned to play piano and all that stuff.
Are you still good at piano? Can you?
I can still play.
Really?
But I'm not,
I'm trying to do a musical show, Cosm. Looking.
Oh, really?
Think about
I'll think of something.
Developing some sort of little thing.
Yeah.
I'm trying to tap the
I have a keyboard still.
Field,
yeah, I still have a keyboard, and I plug it into my Mac and all that stuff, so.
Nice.
Every once in a while. But yeah, okay. But yeah, so, and then just went to college, and I was double majoring, actually. I was doing biology and film. I don't know why I chose film, because I guess they had it. And
wow. So was the biology for mom and pop so that you could do the film?
Yeah, absolutely. And then I failed out of one of them, so you have to guess which one I failed out of.
So, well, what's a nucleotide?
Yeah, I was very bad at the class. Oh, man. I was like an organic chemistry. I'm like, what the fuck am I doing in here? I don't even understand this. What
that
is
seems
this?
To be the Dream Destroyer class.
Yeah. I was
That's
like, what is this? This is very difficult.
Sure.
So, yeah. So that
okay, so you started getting into film.
Yeah.
And then from graduating college, you got your film degree.
Yeah, and I went to grad school and went
for
film school as well.
What did you specialize in?
Well, I went to FSU, Florida State, Go Noles, one of the best, film schools in the country, and they only took, 24 of us out of, many applicants.
Is that the Beyonce Knowles family?
Not the Beyonce Knowles, not the Seminoles, which is, that's everybody's family.
The Seminole Vesicles?
I don't know what that last part, oh, no, not the Seminole Vesicles.
Okay.
No Bible.
I haven't heard of them, but go on.
And got my graduate degree, and then after that I lived, I lived in Florida for a little bit, in Texas, and I just worked on, kind of freelance, worked on movies.
So what was the, for John Wynn, mid-grad school, getting ready to just grab the world, what was the, what was your avatar? What was your, what's your opus of the magnum variety?
I wrote I did two really wacky films, I guess. I did a film before that Ted movie came. I had a movie that was like about this monkey puppet.
Okay.
It's like really well done. Like I shot it in black and white. And
it's done. It's a thing.
Oh, yeah.
How long
exists.
Is it?
It's 5 minutes.
Okay. What's it called?
It's called Links Unchained. Link's Missing. That's the first one. And I did a sequel.
The people demanded more Monkey Puppet.
Yeah.
Was this like a half on the screen puppet or like a obvious hand? What kind of?
No, there were shots where you could see his full body. We did some really cool shots where you could see like he was opening a door. You could see his legs and everything. And
you know the opening the door scene.
It's very difficult.
One of the most poignant pieces of the whole.
It's very difficult to do a puppet opening a door. A lot of people don't realize that. And we did. Yeah, it was lit really well and it was awesome. It was really cool. Shot in black and white and very artistic and. So that was like the first film where I really like expressed myself like comedically, I think, you know,
and it got a great response.
Yeah, exactly, and it got a great response.
The most horrific Muppet movie by Peter Jackson.
Exactly, yeah, and that was like my first big like you know.
Was that like your project for the? You have like a graduate thesis project or film or something?
No, the graduate thesis project, I also, I mean, they only chose 5 students to direct one, and I got one, so I was fortunate.
Oh, cool.
But I had a giant
rabbit.
Were you
fortunate or talented?
Probably more fortunate than talented, because, you know. But yeah, it has a giant
rabbit. Now, does the fortune
rabbit.
Have to do with you being Asian? You have
no, it's
fortune.
Not. It's not, unfortunately, I wish it was more like that, because I wouldn't, you know, I'd probably be more fortunate somewhere else. But so after
like,
that,
like where?
I would love to be in like there are a lot of Asians in Los Angeles. Surely some of that mojo will rub off.
Sure.
Somehow, or New York.
You did a stint in. I mean, you were in LA for a while.
I lived
right?
in Los Angeles for about 2.5 years. Yeah. I lived out there, and I optioned a script. I optioned a script while I was out there, a comedy script.
Mm-hmm.
And. Didn't get made. That's why I moved back. I ran out of money.
What's the elevator pitch on that old script?
It was essentially before.
How many monkey puppets? First of all,
no monkey puppets. Unfortunately, I've for some reason I've abandoned the monkey puppet. I don't even know where the monkey puppet is.
You know
which
what?
Is
Let's
really
move
sad.
On.
No. It's very sad. It's very sad. But it was essentially a spoof movie about superhero movies before they were popular.
Huh.
This is like early 2000, and then essentially it got picked. Somebody else made their own version of it and.
That was one of those like Wayne's or the
yeah. That's exactly what we're trying to do. We're trying to do like a scary movie. And anyway, I don't want to say anything that could get me in legal trouble. But
disparaging remarks.
Allegedly, somebody may have stolen it, but whatever.
Allegedly,
maybe someone stole it. Allegedly.
But either way, it didn't. Why do you think it didn't? Just like them's the odds. That's the game.
The odds. Yeah, man. I mean, you can't copyright ideas. You know what I mean? So a lot of you have to create it. You have to create the idea. You can't just have the idea. And it's like comedy, too, man. You can have the premise, but until you really come up with a great punchline for it,
okay.
The idea can't be copyrighted.
It's open, right?
Yeah, it's open.
You haven't breathed life into it.
Yeah, but it's when you have the punchline. That's your take on it, I think. That's the way I look at comedy a little bit. So, the premise is everything. The premise, the topic of whatever you're talking about, is everything that people experience. But it's your point of view that makes it funny. It's your perspective, and that's the punchline.
Mm-hmm.
So I get very frustrated when I see a lot of new comics essentially doing someone else's punchline because it's someone else's perspective. It's someone else's point of view.
Okay.
And
they just get there from their own wherever they were standing.
Yeah, they're more
to this common.
They're more interested in the immediate laugh, which is of course what you need to. I'm not discounting that either. You want to get the immediate laugh.
Cheap
you know?
Laughs, but laughs nonetheless.
Yeah,
for,
I mean that's what you have to do. That's your job as a comedian. Yeah,
you got to learn to tell between the laughs.
No matter how alternative comedy gets, that term alternative comedy, it still will need to be funny.
Still applies. I mean,
yeah, it still has to be funny. It's just maybe different sensibilities, different audiences, different subjective points of view. It still has to be funny.
I mean, a lot of the alternative comedy thing is like the backlash to whatever was conventional comedy at
right,
the time.
Exactly.
And then once alternative comedy becomes so mainstream, there has to be comedy mocking that setup and round babies have square parents.
Yeah,
and, you know, that whole, you know. It is awesome, though, to see the cycles. And then now, especially, that there's so much stuff out there, and we really can see who's influencing each other. You can see your influences, study what brought them to these things, and connect dots in, like, crazy ways.
Well, it's because the world is so small now. There's so many videos on YouTube, and you can see all of these great bits from older guys and, you know, things where you couldn't only see them, but you could only see them before on stage. But there's still... You know, there's still that fear, like that whole thing with Patton Oswalt, you know, getting upset with person videotaping or recording his set. Uh-huh. I mean, still, yeah, totally understandable, though. I mean, you know, I mean, it's a work. It's right. You know, he's trying to do something.
For the,
it's not
even for the though non-comic, right?
Even though the technology is changing, uh-huh, it doesn't mean that the person's not working. You know, it's sure still making a living.
People, I mean, I think people are definitely more and more starting to realize that a lot of comics, like, have to evolve on stage, and there's just, like, yeah, there's so much that each individual comic can do at home to prepare, some right more than others, but some comics just really need to hammer in a joke a couple times to figure out that this word is wrong.
Right.
And so on and so forth. And that's why, yeah, we don't like being videotaped at random times, and then especially having, like, entire sets put sure up online, and exactly people are like, hey, I thought you'd like it. Yeah. I put your stuff online.
Right. You know.
It's nice, but it's misguided.
Yeah.
But then the other reason, it's great all these bits are out there, every comedian's yeah classic bits, but there's something about YouTube videos that lacks a context. And not just for the show
true
but, or the comedian, but the place, the time, the yeah era, what was going that's on, true like
what was going on in the world.
There's a certain, yeah.
Yeah, it helps says a lot. I mean, it says, I mean, do you think that, you know, I mean, nowadays the world is so quick to express information, Twitter and Facebook, like, do you think all of these people would be getting fired from their jobs, like Gilbert Gottfried and, you know, Daniel Tosh, I mean, not fired, but the uproar.
All the
over
controversy,
I mean,
and now Dane Cook, as you...
Yeah, I mean, you know, you've seen videos where Bill Hicks calls a woman a cunt in the audience, and then you're like, you know, you don't see that video for years.
Really yells at
yeah, her. Really yeah, really goes off on her, but that is... It, maybe it's just society now is so coddled, and maybe hopefully there will be a reaction
it's
to that.
And it's, yeah, and it's the ease at which these situations can now be totally misread out of context.
Exactly.
And
you're right.
And mass disseminated and yeah expressed and yeah and
there's no perspective, unfortunately, and you know it hurts the comic, unfortunately, as well.
And there's just so many like outlets that are so ready to get hold of something inflammatory yeah and edgy.
Yeah, and I mean, why are these news stories?
Ugh.
You know what I mean? Like that's a whole other conversation
right
to have. But like, why? If a guy makes a rape joke, why is that a news story? Why is that on the front page of my, you know, my news, you know, my news website or whatever? Why is that there? Yeah. I mean, is that news? I mean, the guy said a joke.
It's like culture war. It seems like the growing pains of our society.
Yeah.
And like, these kinds of jokes and situations are people's coming to terms
right
with that. A lot of this shit doesn't matter that we've been
right
caring about.
Right.
But like, it's like almost you have to be like, hey, he said this thing.
Yeah.
Everyone, look at this thing he said.
Yeah.
I want to tell you the thing he said. I'm saying the thing he said. And now we're all saying
but
it. And now we talked
isn't
about
it. Isn't
it
weird? Like, the pioneers, like, you know, George Carlin, they're like finding the seven, you know, the seven dirty words and, you know, looking at the government and how the government's going to regulate that.
Right.
And now a guy makes a joke and all of a sudden he's held up on trial on Twitter. You
yeah
know what I mean? Who gives a fuck?
Yeah,
so,
I mean, definitely at least you're not getting pulled off stage and
yeah
arrested for indecency. And
but what it is, you know, it's a catch-22 because comics, and maybe it's changing, I don't know if it is, but the infrastructure is still comics want to work in clubs until they can get theaters and things like that. And to work in clubs, you have to be a little bit, I'm using this term, I don't want to say sell out, but you have to be a likable guy. You have to sell, you still have to, it's a business model.
Sure.
So you have to sell out, you have to, when I say sell, you have to sell the seats, you have to be a name that can get people to sit in there,
mm-hmm,
and that having a TV show helps. Having a
any credits,
yeah, any big credits help. You know
uh-huh
what I mean? And
sure, it bumps your pay up. Apparently,
yeah,
just like
sure
several thousands of arbitrary
sure
dollars,
sure,
irreverent to your ability
yeah
or your ability to draw. I mean,
yeah,
well, drawing is actually important, but your
right
art or your whatever, how funny
exactly
you are,
right,
it doesn't really matter.
Right, it's weird, man. And, but that person
but
is getting people in the seats.
Most comics want to work clubs. Is like it's true, but. I want to say it's becoming a little less.
Well, yeah,
they
want to
work.
It's changing.
They want to work cool clubs.
Yeah,
they
want to
work
it's
independent.
It's changing. I mean, it's changing, but the
at least people they want to work places that get it. How about that?
Yeah, but places like where would you see? I mean, let me just use the state of Texas since I'm from Texas.
Okay.
Texas is a huge state, right? Houston is the fourth largest city in the country.
Mm.
It has one real club, one very C-room club. Two
That's it?
Clubs.
Two clubs in the entire...
a city of like 8 million, 7 million.
Wow.
Okay? Two clubs. That's it.
Those are...
So, yeah. So it's still that idea that, you know, comedy... I don't know, man.
I mean, there's got to be a ton of independent and like little...
There are a couple like bars. Restaurant
rooms.
No, there's a bar. Yeah,
the
bar
of
mics. Yeah.
But, or is it just not a big comedy town?
These are towns where like Ralphie May is from. Okay. You know what I mean? There was a time when there were like five clubs.
Sure.
You know what I mean? But now there's two clubs. And I don't know if it's just a money thing or if that audiences are... As much as YouTube is helping comics, it's hurting the world of comedy.
Hmm.
Because people could just go to YouTube and get that one joke for two minutes and they'll think, that guy's funny.
Okay.
But they don't watch that comic over develop a 45-minute set. And I think that's what's going on, too, with a lot of the young... With newer comics, I think, is that that's where they're watching comedy now. They're not watching a guy do a 7-minute clean set on TV, like showcase shows.
Uh-huh.
I mean, look at showcase shows now. They barely exist.
Sure.
It's like two, you know.
John
what I mean?
Oliver's like the last
John Oliver,
triumph
yeah.
of the
right.
genre.
But
right
the,
now.
I mean, when they used to have Live at Gotham, man, how cool of a show was that, where it was like seven people you really had never heard of
uh-huh.
before. What a great opportunity for a comic to get at least one credit, you know, on the Comedy Central.
And just a long, you know, a comfortable set.
Yeah. And when
nothing
you look,
rushed.
When you look at John Oliver now, man, it's like these are guys who have been around like 10 years.
Yeah, these people are getting like
yeah.
this is like a nice meal for them who deserve
not,
it.
Not
like,
that not that Live at Gotham was like, I'm not discounting that, like they were just taking anybody off the street.
Uh-huh.
You know, but I'm just saying that
almost like a small tier below.
Yeah.
Like John Oliver one is people who are like breaking right now. Like
exactly. Yeah.
This one is like just pre-break. Like
yeah, exactly.
People riding the wave.
Right. So I just think the way audiences view stuff and the way YouTube helps and it hurts.
Exactly. Right. It's everything new that
yeah.
happens to us really like depending how we use it and
yeah.
how we can like come to terms with it. Yeah, it will help or hurt. Because hopefully at least some of the people who see the clip will perhaps journey to find a longer
right.
clip.
Or they won't.
They'll see him live. Yeah, or they won't.
Yeah.
Or some of the clips on there, some people pirate like entire shows
yeah,
broken up
exactly.
into 10-minute clips.
Exactly.
So they may
exactly.
watch the hour inadvertently,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
Well, interesting anyway. I love, you know, talk comedy, chopping
yeah.
that up. Let's move on, though.
Okay.
We have to. There's no possible way that we could do this without... referencing a thing happening right now that is so colossal, so influential, a magnanimous of magnitude, that it makes me gibber.
Wow, that's a big compliment.
And
I guess.
That
I don't
is,
know
you're
going to
be a father. No, no, Labor Day.
Yeah,
I don't care about
gibbering
your kid.
Right now.
I don't care about your kid.
I wish I gibbered in a cup or something instead of, yeah. Gibbering.
Oh, that's the new, that's going to be the new ejaculating.
I should have. Gibbered all over.
You're a gibbering
yes,
idiot.
Yes, I will have a baby soon. Very, I can't believe it, but yeah, I'm excited. My wife's doing a great job, man. She's
nice.
A real trooper.
Really?
Yeah, it's really. I get it now. It's really hard for women.
You get it now? after what, seven,
yeah,
eight
never,
months of
yeah,
pregnancy?
Never,
now,
for 30-something years, I never got it. Now I really get it. I mean, you know, she's like, you know, there's a massive weight gain. It's all this weight
uh-huh.
on her body that she's never had in her entire life. You know what I mean? So she's slower. She's, you know, just joints. The joints and the pressure.
Right.
For women.
Like
it's amazing.
An
amazing.
Extra person and a half.
I swear to God, if that kid gives us any lip growing up, I'm going to guilt that kid so much. I'm going to say, look at your mom. Look how your mom had to carry you in your fucking mouth. So shut up.
You
yeah.
hear that? You hear that kid listening
yeah.
in the future?
Kid listening in the future to this.
Possible. Very possible. Barring, I mean, apocalypses. People
yeah.
say it's going to happen. I think we're going to figure something out.
Yeah, I think so. I hope so. I want to see the new Superman movie next year, so I hope.
You know,
hope
if for any reason,
get through,
kid, people
come on,
can stop fighting.
Come on, get through this.
So we can get a good, decent heir to the yeah. Superman franchise. Labor Days is really what... Although I'm very happy about
yeah,
your
thank you.
Imminent progeny.
Thank you.
and the lack of Labor Days, that's going to happen because of the kid.
Yes.
But as of now, you have a web series that you
yeah.
have helmed.
I have helmed it. That's good. You have a great vocabulary. I have Labor Days. It's at labordays.tv. It's on YouTube as well. So I'm using YouTube to my advantage as well because the world is changing. And, you know, sitcoms, and I think the traditional structure of television is changing. And
so you say changing, I would say crumbling.
Yeah, I mean, it still makes money. So what's going to end up happening is the shows that people watch that get the most audience, that bring in the network more money in advertising, would be the shows that are going to populate the airwaves.
Okay.
So that's why you have all these reality judging musical talent shows, because on a very core level, they're clean for families can watch them. I can sell as much product to them. You're not going to see a Trojan commercial on that. So, you know,
sure.
I can sell soap. I can sell cars. I can sell toys. I can sell to the masses.
Right.
And these other unique ideas are going to spill. Where will they go? The only place right now is the web, but it's hard to monetize that yet. There is a way to monetize
right.
it, but it's not
the
new structure.
Systems aren't in place yet.
It's not
right.
structured
and,
yet.
And as the
right.
old system either tries to adapt or crumbles.
Right.
You know, new ones will take its place,
right.
or then the savvy old ones will evolve
yeah.
into something.
Yeah, I mean, it's all evolution. So, you know, when I was doing this idea, Forrest Shaw and I, we'd been thinking about an idea for a long time, and I had this idea of a day labor crew. That was the idea, and we'd talked about it, years ago.
Does
actually.
Everyone know what a day labor crew is? Around the nation?
I don't know.
We have some European listeners.
Yeah, okay. In America, when you come here illegally, when you come to our great country illegally, you
welcome to How to Find a Coyote.
Yeah. So, a day labor crew is essentially a group, a freelance crew of individuals who are picked up at like hardware stores, and they go and they do a job for a day, manual labor.
You jump in the back of someone's truck.
Yeah.
Under the table.
But yeah, that's what a day labor crew is essentially. That's it's a manual labor.
For those whose options are limited,
right.
at the moment,
exactly.
Like and immigration's a big issue right now, so it's a great angle from that, and also from your joke was like what it was probably
yeah.
like your biggest like
it's my first it was like the first,
first
joke that
exactly.
I really wrote because you know I really wanted
that would
to
hit every
yeah
time.
That, yeah exactly it was like the first big joke that I wrote and that I was like
which you can hear if you watch the first
episode yeah right
it's the very beginning
yeah so it's that premise it's the premise of this mistaken identity of and you know it's about the economy it's just a lot of things going on with it and. So Forrest and I, you know, we came up with a bunch of ideas for episodes, and then we just kind of sat on it for a while because it's a lot of work, you know? Mm-hmm. It's a lot of work, and I was really tired from, you know... I teach film, so, I mean, I spend a lot of time working with students, and I come up with ideas for them, and, I don't do it. I just come up with ideas. I help them.
Right.
They do it, and... You know, but you still get some joy
out of
that.
That's creative work.
Right.
It's not like you go to a job where you're clicking numbers and you're a free comic at night.
Yeah,
like,
it's mentally draining. And then
but it also has to be strengthening, though, because you're just, like, lifting weights all day with that muscle.
Exactly. I just got into the habit of making quick decisions and helping them. But around, like everything, you kind of get tired of your job, and, you kind of wonder, like, what the energy that I'm spending for other people. What am I doing for myself? And that was kind of one of these things. And they were having a contest at the end of the last year, at the beginning of this year, actually, in January. And Forrest called me, right before Christmas. He said they're taking pitches for Comedy Central pilots, and maybe we should try to do this right now. And I said, okay, let's do it.
Let's do it.
It's time to do it.
That's like It's Always Sunny
yeah.
in Philadelphia.
Yeah, exactly. That was what they based the contest on. So. We did it, I paid for it, I financed it, I got the crew, we wrote the episode together, I wrote the story, and I knew exactly how I wanted things to kind of work and fit, and...
Right.
And then he and Forrest would take it, and he's really funny, and he writes great, he would write, tweet the jokes.
Great,
yeah,
you
we have
put
a good
the bones,
system.
And he's great at flesh, and you
yeah,
guys come together.
Yeah, and we just come together, and we did it. We did it in about, three days total.
Mm-hmm.
And
this is, like, how much of the equipment you use is, like... Because the show looks like, professional.
Yeah,
right? But, like,
yeah.
The shots...
You can get these cameras now for, like, $800. We're using, like, these very prosumer cameras. You could do so much with this equipment nowadays. So, it's pretty awesome.
Nice. So, yeah, you made that. And then it was... a lot of people love it. There's so many Miami comedians. The whole show is just chock full of our pool.
Yeah, you were in one. You were in the second episode, which was awesome. You were great in it. And, I'm trying to do something very different, man. I'm trying to do something where it's not sketches.
Uh-huh.
Like, it's an actual... show.
It's a narrative.
It's a narrative sitcom.
Things tie at the end, yeah. And also you are rewarded for watching beginning to end all the episodes.
I'm trying to, yeah, I want, and that's the hard part. That's like where I fight, you know, and mentally is like, do I want to keep the episode shorter, because more people will probably watch it, because that's what the world is, YouTube wants
that's
it to be 7 minutes. Or do I try to maintain this weird hybrid of a web series that's part sitcom, part web, you know, like really for the short, you know?
Everything's supposed to be so modular these days, you can plug it in.
So I don't know, man. I have
10-minute, your shows are 10 to 14.
10 to 14, yeah, depends on, yeah.
Minutes. And that itself, though, is becoming an increasingly popular vehicle, like all the Adult Swim stuff are these 10-minute shows.
Exactly.
Because it's just long enough to, like, convey some kind of story, but just hit jokes. And, you know, and it's short. And people.
Yeah, and I didn't want it to be a sketch show. I didn't want to do sketches, like, per se. You know what I mean?
Just
like,
non-associated. What about it?
I wanted it to be.
Because you shot on in the set at Casa, you were like, it's not a sketch show. It's scripted. It's not one of these stupid-ass sketch improv shows. Have you guys watched these? Of course you don't. They're shit.
Well, I mean, sketch shows can.
Who hurt you? Is what I'm asking.
I have no issue with improv. I have an issue with improv people thinking stand-up is easy. That's what bothers me. I see a lot of these guys cross over for improv. And like, well, I've been doing comedy for 5 years. Yeah, well, for four of those years, you were doing it with four other people on stage.
Right.
To really understand what it's like to be a stand-up comic, you have to go on stage by yourself with your own jokes. That's a key element. These guys going up there without their own jokes, you're using someone else's material as a shield. That's what I get upset about.
As an improv comedian or as a bad stand-up?
And as a bad stand-up, just in general. To be a real comic, I think, means to go on stage.
You have to be original. I mean,
yeah, you have to be original. Yeah. You gotta go up there and try to say something with your perspective. That's what I was saying earlier. That's about perspective. That's what makes you unique.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to find that thing that will make you unique, and you're not going to know it right off the bat. You're going to bomb. And I think, man, so many people are still so consumed with killing and rocking the mic, and but they don't realize that the greatest thing, the greatest way to grow as a comic is to bomb. You have to bomb. And some people are just not wanting to bomb. Yeah, no one wants to bomb.
Right.
But it's inevitable. It's like a great baseball player who strikes out. I mean, what's the thing? Like Babe Ruth hit however many home runs he hit, but he also struck out the most.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, because you're going to swing for the fences.
You miss all the shots you don't take and all
that. Yeah, you have to try hard, and it's going to bomb. You have to be willing.
Well, you have to go outside your comfort zone.
Yeah, and you
to be yourself. You have to give them something that they have never seen.
Right.
You can't be echoing your idol's opinions like pretending to be those you aspire.
Right.
You know.
But everybody does that though initially.
You have to do it. Right.
When I started, you know, I'm a huge Dave Attell fan. And I tried to write like Dave Attell. I tried to sound like Dave Attell.
I can see because 4 years, I've seen you pretty much since you.
Yeah, since I started.
We've been running
on
the same. And I came down, I've been 5 years, but 4 years were here in Miami. So
yeah, so it's about the same time. You know what I mean?
Same time. Right, and you did have that very punchy because you know your style is you're very subtle, and you have the smooth delivery. But when people listen to what you're saying, they're hit by this like. This bruising punch to the face, and then they're like, "Holy shit!" I was like,
"That sounds beautiful." I wish I could define it like that. I'm like, I hope that's funny, but yeah, I like the way you describe it much better than I do.
People like you. People really enjoy the John Wayne.
Oh, thanks, man.
They're big fans, and you did, you know, you were in the comedy contest and
for
what those are worth. You had a strong showing, and you always, you know.
Yeah, I mean, comedy contests are once you know that they are. It's subjective, man. Comedy is subjective. And that's why, you know, you do see people writing on, you know, on Facebook and all that stuff. Hey, man, I just killed it. And then you see them live and you're like, you did not kill, man. You've never killed.
You don't know what killing is.
Yeah, you don't know what killing is until you do like 20 minutes consistently. I mean, so, you know, who told me that? I think AZ told me that, which is wild. But he said, you know, anybody can kill in 5 minutes. It's true. If you have really great poppy jokes in 5 minutes is not a lot of time, but 20 minutes is it's getting people to like you. That's really where it's at. It's about building a trust with an audience. It's more work than just telling jokes. It's about building something.
Uh-huh.
It's
right.
Connecting with an audience, you know.
People are staring at you open, receiving.
Yeah.
The things you're doing, the things you're saying, the concepts, they're letting you in to that, to dance around in their head.
Yeah. So it's just a journey that everybody's got to go through. Everybody has their own path. You can do whatever you want. I mean, you know, some comics are more interested in the fame of comedy, mm-hmm. and some comics are interested in the comedy of comedy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think you have to choose whichever one is you want to do, and it's good for you. But I just see that when I see improv guys, to get back to that original thing.
Yeah, because we were shitting on them originally.
Yeah, I just think you don't really know how hard it is to... Because you always have someone else to rely on. You always have someone
else. So, like, you see that as a safety net.
Yeah, I see that as a safety net. I mean,
so is it like... Because, you know, I know there are criticisms on the other side of the stream.
Sure.
You know, that there's a complexity and a you know, team dynamic to the whole improv thing that, you know, is a level just as high as the solo stuff that we're doing.
Sure.
The,
I've never done improv, you know what I mean? So
neither have I. You know, it's interesting. There's such a weird divide that, like, comics almost have to choose one or the other.
Yeah.
I would kind of love to do both, and there are comics that do.
Yeah, I mean, Aziz Ansari started, you know, as an improv guy. You know,
it's a Miami thing, because...
Maybe it is a Miami thing, I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying it's easier to do improv, I'm not saying that. I'm sure it's just as difficult to come with an idea, but I think the audiences are more forgiving with an improv...
Just because the whole...
The concept of it is situation, just making setup. It up. Yeah, right. So give me a little bit of leniency because I'm just coming up with this.
Right.
Whereas comedy is, I have to make it seem like I just came up with this.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? So there's more...
Interesting.
There's more of a, you know, these are my thoughts. I mean, just the fact that people... No one's getting upset with improv groups for making a rape joke. They're getting upset with Daniel Tosh.
Are improv groups making enough rape jokes?
I don't think so. Maybe that's why.
Get on it, improv groups.
More rape jokes, guys.
Come on.
But Daniel talks because they don't look at it as a performance. They really see stand-up comedy. And that's a real testament to really good stand-ups. This is the guy's thoughts. Hmm. This is not a joke that he wrote 5-10 years ago and has been working it on the road and getting it perfect. It's his thought. So how dare he have that thought? Mm. And so I think they're less forgiving. I think audiences are more forgiving for improv because, like, hey, we're playing. We're playing. It's fun.
Right.
We're doing the same thing as comics. We're playing, but I mean, you know, it's just that the audiences are more quick to be like, "Hey, it wasn't funny." Whereas the improv group, they're like, "Eh, whatever."
It's going somewhere.
Yeah. Where does it go? Yeah.
But
when you see really bad improv, it's really bad.
It's worse than bad stand-up. It's like there's a multiplication effect.
Yeah.
Like they can create a scene that takes you to another world that maybe a solo stand-up comedian has to work really fucking hard to get there.
Right.
But the lows are low, baby.
Yeah. I just don't think... I mean, I've never done improv, so again, I have to, you know... But doing this show, Labor Days, it has made me appreciate performance, you know, performing that. Because we improv a little bit. We come up with stuff. But, again, I think that you can rely on somebody else. That's why I find it to be easier. I find making these episodes... I mean, the technical work is hard. Mm-hmm. But when we're doing a scene or something, I find it to be... easy because we can rely on
bounce
each other.
Bounce stuff off each other. Yeah. Synergy. Oh, definitely.
Yeah, there's an energy you have to feel with the actors and stuff. So maybe that's the thing in improv. Maybe.
And creative partnerships are like this. Yeah. When you find that improv partner that really, you know. Yeah. I watched a ton of, I know it's cliche, but the Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Yeah,
as a kid.
They're very funny, man.
And
I mean,
when you saw, you know, Colin Mockery and Ryan Stiles, like they had this lover's bond.
You see good improv, it's amazing. It is really amazing when you see it. And then when you see bad improv, it's really bad.
Sure.
So it's like, it's hard.
It's like stand up, I guess, you know?
Yeah. I think it's this. I mean, maybe it's the same. Maybe I'm being elitist.
It almost seems like improv is like taking a picture, whereas stand up is like painting a masterpiece, like painstakingly stroke by stroke.
Maybe. That's a great
like
way of looking at it.
Looking at it and then painting it, looking at it, painting at it. And improv's just like, click, look, I'm on Instagram.
Just at this moment,
clackety.
And moving on from it.
Yeah.
Maybe,
8,000
maybe
photos
that's
later.
Better. I wish maybe I could, maybe I should do improv.
I'm sure it just could do nothing but help us.
Yeah.
Like, in every
maybe there's the world's big enough
maybe,
for both.
Yeah.
Even though I still think that there's, I don't know.
But that's what they say, you know, the solo thing, it's like the most, it's like the Johnny Fighter pilot. Like, you're the top gun, you're the ace out there.
I don't know, I think, maybe I like the challenge of that. I like the challenge of really you're up there by yourself with the light, with a microphone, and your jokes. And again,
your jokes. Sure.
Because there are a lot of guys who don't, they're doing stand-up, but they're not using their jokes.
It's the two schools, like you said, like the, you know, the people, because people do ask me, and today it happened, I was waiting at a table, and these people asked me how they... you know, Last Comic Standing or the talent competition. Sure. Have you thought about this? Have you, you know, and it's, it lends to the kind of comic that you said earlier that is kind of more going for the fame and, you know, rather than like really trying to understand and master or pay tribute to something, whatever, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah. Say something. I mean,
And
even now.
And literally to say something. Yeah. Because it is about getting a laugh, but today that's like not even enough.
Yeah. I mean,
like if I don't get a cool, like poignant thought, it's almost, it's like it's popcorn.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and I have a lot of throwaway jokes. I mean, a lot of my jokes are just throwaway jokes, but I'm trying to figure out what I'm trying to say or what I want to say on stage, but how to make it funny. I mean, you can say so many things and have an opinion. Mm. But again, that's what stand-up comedy is. Stand-up comedy is having an opinion, but making it, in a, just saying it in a perspective that people will either laugh at or laugh with you. You know what I mean?
Coat it with sugar and sweet.
And that's hard. That's hard and it takes time. And I see a lot of these young guys are like, I got a headline.
Is that crazy?
I think it's crazy because you
they're like a year, 2 years into
All right, I hate it when they're writing. I'm headlining already. I'm like, no, you're really not headlining yet. You know what I mean? Like, sure. I headlined one time.
You're doing like an extended open mic set. You're doing like 10 5-minute sets. Yeah. You know.
But that's a good thing about Miami, I guess, or South Florida. I mean, I do like the South Florida comedy scene. I'm not trying to knock it because you have 3 A-list clubs on the East Coast. You know, you have a couple of great rooms on the West Coast. And, you know, just down in South Florida, I mean, Naples, and, you know, you have these great rooms. And you have these little small rooms, too, which, you know, can be hit or miss, you know. But it's really there for you to work.
So can the clubs, really.
Huh?
So can the clubs, really, be hit or miss.
They can be hit or miss, too, yeah.
Yeah, it's compelling, man. The Miami scene.
Yeah, man.
Let's see. So anything you want to, you know, tell people, your Twitter, anything, your plug you
want
to...
Yeah, I mean, I just really want people to watch Labor Days. And if you can share it with people, if you know somebody who might like it, I would really like it to begin to expand outside of South Florida.
South Florida.
That's my goal. Like,
right
sure.
Now, it's,
I was, like, planning on going to
it's
L.A.
It's free, funny entertainment. And as of now, like, if you haven't seen it, you can go on and watch basically a full half hour... It's back-to-back 3 episodes of a good show, and that's
like
only going to be more of that.
Yeah, it's like 40 minutes of a show. I mean, it's, you know, and that's the beauty of the internet. You can stop it wherever you want, come back to it, and jump to it. And I think we're doing something very, I don't know, it's definitely not unique, but we're doing something different.
That's the worst distinction to make at this point.
I'm very bad.
Blew the sale, John.
I'm a very bad. I'm not a good promoter, but
we just lost the people that you're.
No,
just,
okay. Listen, it's unique in the sense that it's not like your typical web series.
Look, you've seen everything here before, people. But the people's the color are their skin, the tones. You're not familiar to Miami palette of skin tone.
I think it's something. It is different. I mean, it's, I don't know, unique. I say the word unique. I mean, even I use it sometimes.
Everything's like, unique. Well, by definition, you know, and even George Carlin had the old bit, something can't be more unique than something else. By definition, something unique is unlike anything else.
It's unlike anything else, right.
So, which this is, damn it. So can you just say Labor Days is unique?
It's unique, I guess. Labor Days is unique. I say with reservations, but it's funny. It's a funny show. It's got a lot of great Miami comics like Daniel and... Forrest Shaw's in it, and Kirk Meadows,
Lisa
Durango, and Dave Williamson, and
Ellie Rodriguez, Eric Myers, Freddie Stebbins from the last episode. You're going to be hearing about Labor Days, folks. Like you've probably heard about it before. You're going to hear about it again.
But yeah, if you can share it with
listened to this show, certainly.
Yeah, like-minded people. Share it with like-minded people, your friend.
So cool, yeah, labordays.tv, everyone. And follow, you're on Twitter, The Funny Asian.
Yeah, The Funny Asian.
At The Funny Asian, because, I don't know, you can check on Wikipedia. He's literally the only funny Asian person.
That's not true.
That's where the Twitter handle comes from.
I just took it because it was distinctive. But I'm not. I'm definitely not
The Funny
Asian.
Maybe you should change it to A Funny Asian.
I can't because it already exists, A Funny Asian. I think it exists.
There's already A Funny Asian out there?
Maybe I should have put The Funny Asian in Miami, but that's not true either because Nandu is much funnier than
that.
He's
in New York now.
I know, so I don't know. I can still claim
that. So now you're the funniest Asian in town.
There is another Asian comic, but...
it's a few.
Yeah.
Is that weird being a... Because it's almost like being a female comic when people are like, hey, this next comic's a lady comic. Like, you get a little less of that, but almost as much, it seems.
I think it's more acceptable to give blowjobs as a female comic, though.
Than to be an Asian comic?
For me, to be
doing
it. Oh,
than to blow people.
Yeah, blow people. It's really weird.
Well, South Beach, everyone.
Yeah,
it's not far from here.
Yeah. For me, it's... I don't know.
He's going to be a father. Perfect cover.
But I think Asians have a good sense of humor. I think that's what it is.
Do you think they have an especially good sense of humor?
I mean, except for the Koreans. They're very angry. No, I'm just kidding. No. I think as a collective group, I think overall they do. But I mean,
Asians. Because, you know, you don't... It's honestly not the first place people's heads, you know, or...
What?
There's a bad, like, corniness association.
Yeah. No.
I don't know. I mean, all the Asian comics, you know, but an Americanized person of any ethnicity is, like, an American.
I think your first, you know, the first few years of doing comedy, you're going to write about what you know.
You know what? They're going to say, I said Asians aren't funny now, and now they're going to blow this up.
That'd be great.
Inflammatory.
You need
good press,
promotion.
Right?
Yeah, you need as much press as possible.
Oh, man. I couldn't even tell if they're funny because I can't understand them with all the rice in their mouth.
If you had said some kind of Asian rape joke, we would be trending tomorrow.
Oh, no.
But yeah, man, I mean, who knows?
I'm not even going to riff on that.
Yeah. But, you can edit this part.
We're going to wrap it up. Yeah, we can just rape that out. Rape that on out.
Well, thanks for having me, man, on your show. I love it.
My pleasure, man. It was glad to get you on here. And,
You're great.
Wish you luck. No more. Don't say any more nice things.
You're a great contributor to the comedy scene, Daniel. Jeez. So.
Well, you know, we're making shit. You and I.
We're making stuff.
So you
that's
know,
what you have to do.
And hopefully more
also people
do.
Will make stuff. Yeah.
We're not the first. We're not the last.
Yeah.
But we are, and we're earnest. We're trying. We're trying to put production value.
Yeah.
Trying to make
it good.
Out some YouTube bullshit.
Trying to make it good, man.
Trying to make it good. All right, John Wynn. Thanks so much. Bye, bye, everybody. Oh yes, I'd like to thank all of my guests. I'd like to thank Dominic Perenzin up top, and then I'd like to thank John Wynn for keeping it from stop pin. And then Kirk Meadows came, saw, and conquered, and then the next name belonged to Eric Myers, who stole the show. And then it was time for Johnny Winterview. Johnny Winterview is actually his Vegas stage name, in case you don't know that. In the off-season, he likes to go to the B-Strip and just work some stuff out at the old Tootsie Roll Room. It was a great interview. Thank you for everyone who was involved in the show and everyone who couldn't get featured but was there, and the people, and Sweat. Oh, God, thank you so much. I just really didn't think this was going to happen, guys. I don't know what to say. Watch Labor Days, guys. Thanks again. You know, it was great to be a part of episode 2. Even though I'm not in any of the others, I say, you know what, go ahead, watch them. You know, you have my blessing. In fact, we're going to end this show the right way. Next time on Casa de Jaja Podcast. Casa Got Talent. The comedy contest to end all comedy contests' lives. Last comic misunderstanding. After 43 weeks of preliminary competitions, we've narrowed it down. And the contestants are going to go against our celebrity judges, who are sassy and shoot stuff at them, literally. And we're going to interview the exclusive winner. But in the meantime, go watch those laborious days. Yeah!